This is the Packet Pushers podcast. Today we are located in a well-ventilated space with free coffee, comfortable chairs and an unquenchable thirst for all things networking. Yes, that's right. The Packet Pushers podcast is a place where technical discussion is celebrated and valued, unlike other places in the world. Today, the Packet Pushers virtual boardroom has been instantiated in the land of virtualization once again with a homing signal from our sponsors today, VMware, who want to share the glorious future of software-defined networking by talking about the announcement of VMware's NSX product. Packet Pushers has talked a lot about SDN over the last year or two, and I know that many of you have given us feedback saying that we've probably done it a little bit too much, but I'm here to tell you that SDN is a real thing and we're seeing real products reaching the mainstream of the market. And this is heralded by VMware launching their NSX product. So I'm really excited that we are being joined today by Brad Hedlund and Scott Lowe to talk in detail about the NSX product. But before we launch into that discussion, let's welcome Mr. Banks to the show. How are you today, sir?
Good. I have started a new day job. I'm learning Juniper stuff and getting into that and discovering a whole new network that is to be mine, for I am the senior network architect and I will be obeyed.
You and finding is that like walking down the yellow brick road and finding all the little evil goblins in the corner? Oh, evil. Nasty.
I have found a bit of those. Yeah.
Okay.
First maintenance and so on and so on. So I'm glad to be a part of the show today and looking forward to hearing Brad and Scott discuss. Well, I've been over some slides and looked at some of the presentation material on NSX, and there's a lot going on with this product. So looking forward to getting into the conversation here.
Perfect. So Brad, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, thanks, Greg. Yeah, my name's Brad Hedlund, and I'm a blogger at bradhedlund.com, and I've spent some time at Cisco, a little bit of time at Dell, and I'm now at VMware, focused entirely on network virtualization and VMware NSX and all the SDN goodness that that brings.
That's a great transition as you move from one organization to another. You must have seen a few different things in your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent a lot of time with customers out in the field, on the front lines, setting up networks and data centers. And then, of course, spent some time in the vendor area. I'm actually selling products. I've seen a lot of different architectural transitions over the time. And I would say that this network virtualization in SDN is one of the biggest shifts that I've certainly seen in my career.
I'd certainly agree. And Scott, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Greg. My name is Scott Lowe. I am a blogger. I write at blog.scottlowe.org. Have been privileged enough to write a few books on virtualization and vSphere and also work with Brad at VMware. Before VMware, I was with EMC.
Now, I'm a close follower of your blog, and you have a lot of great content on there, so I can highly recommend to people that you head over to scottlowe.org. And I've noticed lately you're transitioning to networking, and you're starting to talk about the things that you've learned there.
Yes. Networking's always been kind of a side passion of mine. I have focused on virtualization for many, many years, but said that you can't do virtualization effectively without knowing the other things too, but always wanted to dive deeper into networking, and I see this transition to VMware and the transition the industry is making as a great opportunity for me to do more.
You see,
looking forward to that.
You all join us in the end.
They all do. They all come to where the packets are.
That's right. All right, so why don't we kick things off by asking Brad to tell us a brief introduction to what and how VMware NSX works.
Yeah, basically, so VMware NSX is what we're calling a network virtualization platform. So we want to provide a similar abstraction for virtual networks as VMware did for the virtual machine. So we want to give you the ability to create complete virtual networks that are services rich, things like including logical switches, logical routers, logical firewalls, logical load balancers, to really create everything that you need in an application architecture and load that into an environment really on top of any network platform, on top of any hypervisor, utilized by any cloud management platform. And all of those networking constructs, virtual network elements, are exposed by the NSX API, to which you can point provisioning systems at and things like that, all of this is driven by programmable vSwitches and SDN controllers and gateways that interface between the virtual and physical. So at the end of the day, we want you to be able to deploy a virtual network for an application at the same speed and operational, you know, efficiency that you can deploy a virtual machine. So it really, you know, for the last decade or so, we've been able to throw these virtual machines out there, you know, within seconds, but getting the network for that application, totally provisioned has always been what's kind of dragged on application deployment. So we're really hoping that VMware NSX really brings some additional speed and efficiency to network deployments.
Before we get into the technical aspects of NSX, which, you know, is definitely something we want to get into, but explain who the target customer is that would be looking at and evaluating NSX.
Yeah, I would say anybody that's deploying a cloud environment, would be that a private cloud, for example, where you want to, a self-service portal, for example, for developers to go in and provision applications in any point in the life cycle of that application, whether it be, you know, QA, development, or final stages of production. Anybody that's really looking to bring a lot more speed and agility and efficiency to deploying applications in a data center, for example, a private cloud, really, you know, backed up by a cloud portal like an OpenStack or a vCloud portal, and really eliminate a lot of the kind of the manual provisioning tasks of setting up, you know, firewalls and load balancers that you typically have to deal with today to set up an application. So really, application teams, network architects, building out private cloud environments in a data center, I would say, is our target audience.
I think it's probably reasonable to say that, you know, building on what Brad said, that organizations that have adopted the idea of not only technically structuring their architectures to leverage the technologies that are present in a cloud computing infrastructure, but also to organizationally adopt that, are really the target markets that are going to be really looking at NSX. And these are probably going to be the larger enterprises, at least initially.
I guess one thing to think of is that, and this is something I experienced recently, was in the last 5 years, we've seen our data centers go from X number of servers. Let's say you had 100 servers 5 years ago, and now you might have 600 or 700 server instances. The use of virtualization has exploded the number of VMs in an enterprise. This is just in a medium-sized enterprise. And so we can't really administer a VM as a single thing anymore. We have to treat them in clusters or groups. You can't say, I'm going to work on the Omega, the server called Omega, and then the one over here called Delta and another one called Alpha. You've got to treat them as fleets and in groups. You've got to find ways to automate, but networking hasn't supported that feature, and that's what I see NSX as coming to attacking, is providing that ability to treat the network as just a group of stuff that amorphously self-configures and self-adapts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, deploying network at the same time that you're deploying the compute. You know, we've always been able to like stand up farms of VMs, you know, through APIs, and then the networking, either hope the networking is there, right? You hope that the VLANs are set up and the firewall contexts are set up. Or if it's not, then you have to, you know, run around and submit change tickets and wait a couple of weeks and maybe the network is ready. This gives you the ability to deploy with APIs the same time you're firing up those VMs, you're deploying the network at the very same time, and you have checks and balances, right? You have one engine that's really provisioning this and can get basically transactional processing of, okay, I deployed this VM and I'm going to go deploy the network for that VM, and I get, you know, an acknowledgement back from both systems that everything was done on time, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that we're going to dive into the technology in a minute, but the one other point that we should draw to people's attention is it's not just about the VM and connecting it to the network. It's also about the services attached to that.
That's absolutely right. So things like routing, firewall, load balancers, even higher level security services like, you know, IDS and IPS and WAN acceleration, you know, all of those things that are typically in an application architecture, which you don't think of on day one.
No, the network is there to provide services. And that's been very difficult for us to do. You know, you have a load balancer here, or you have a physical firewall over here, and you have to run the traffic to it. In this environment, and the thing about NSX, and here's why you need to tune in you know, I'm speaking to the listeners really, is that NSX allows us to put the firewalls in the instantiation process, in software, right next to where the VM is. So why don't we transition the discussion over to starting to talk about how the VMware NSX architecture works. So try and give us a highlight of how NSX does things differently to the way we do things today.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say so. You know, since 2005, when VMware really started to enter the enterprise data center applications, we've had this concept of a vSwitch for a very long time. And I'm coming from a network background, and I always, you know, viewed this vSwitch as just this basic layer two switch, this basic bridge. And I needed to basically attach that vSwitch to the top of rack switch and connect it into all the right VLANs, make sure the top rack switch is all set up properly, and you know, map things, steer traffic to a load balancer and firewall and all of that. Really what we're doing with NSX is we're taking that vSwitch and we're bringing a whole lot more functionality to it. So rather than it just being a typical layer two bridge, it's becoming a layer three switch. It's becoming a firewall, things like that. And it's distributed out across all the hypervisors. And to control all of that state and control, you have a cluster of NSX controllers. So this would be kind of the SDN controller component that programs these vSwitches. Instead of these vSwitches being individual things you go configure, they're programmable now. So you have a controller cluster which programs the vSwitches for things like switching, routing, and firewalling. And then you have a component called the edge gateways. And the edge gateway is really where you interface the virtual network to the physical network. So the edge gateway's got one leg onto a VLAN, for example, facing physical routers or maybe a physical load balancer firewall. And then the other leg is on the inside, connected to the virtual network, controlled by the SDN controllers. And you have these tunneling that happens between the edge vSwitches, programmable vSwitches, that the SDN controller or the NSX controller programs. So you have basically a decoupling there of the configuration of the physical network from what's actually happening in the virtual network. So leveraging SDN technologies through the NSX controller, we have edge gateway technologies connecting virtual to physical and programmable vSwitches. And all of that the controllers really expose an API to the outside world that anybody can go and program, you know, a feature-rich virtual network against. So you take your OpenStack or your CloudStack or your vCloud portal, and you provision a virtual network for an application using the APIs that are exposed by the NSX controller. And then you also have a manager. You have the NSX manager, which is really the human interface to this, the operational interface, the GUI, if you will, where I can go look at the NSX manager. I can see a visual representation of the environment. I could create elements in the system manually, point and click, if I wanted to. It's basically just another API interface to the NSX controllers.
Now, with all that software that's riding up there, and all that functionality that's being provided, is there a strong dependency on what the network hardware is that all of this functionality rides on top of?
Well, really, with the decoupling, with the tunneling that happens between the vSwitches, and all that tunneling is using IP protocols. Like there's several different tunneling protocols. There's VXLAN, there's GRE, there's STT. We could offering a choice to use any of those tunneling protocols. Really, what we require, the ultimate base level requirement, is that there's IP connectivity between all of these hypervisors. And the hypervisors and the gateways and the NSX controller. What you begin to do is you can separate now the physical network architecture from the virtual network architecture and solve each area with, you know, architecturally independently. So you can go and build up a fabric that's an IP forwarding fabric to connect all your hypervisors and gateways to, and then you deploy your virtual networks on top of that.
Yeah, so the idea is to have a strong underlay network. You mentioned fabric right there. But to have some strong, well-designed Ethernet network that's running IP, and then NSX gets deployed on top of that. And as long as what you've got underneath is robust and so on, NSX is going to work well.
Yeah, absolutely. A fabric, right? A typical design might be, let's say before network is virtualization and before NSX, you would say, okay, I need to have build a big, massive layer two network because I need to have layer two adjacency between all the racks because I never know where a VM might be. So your physical network architecture there is based on a layer two architecture. When you put NSX into the picture and network virtualization, you're separating the physical architecture from the virtual topology. So now with the decoupling and the tunneling between the hypervisors, you don't necessarily need to have a layer two between all of your racks and all of your VMs. You just need to have IP connectivity. So now you can build, for example, you could keep a layer two network if that's how you like to deploy network, or you could build a layer three fabric with a layer three top rack switch connected to a layer three core switch, providing a scale out, robust, equal cost, multipath IP forwarding fabric. And then all the layer two adjacencies, the logical switching and the routing is all provided by that programmable vSwitch in the hypervisor, providing those services to the virtual machines at the edge.
There was a saying in the compute virtualization side that gained some traction for a while, and that was that if you weren't good at managing server instances, then virtualization wasn't going to fix that. Virtualization was going to make it worse. And I edited some of the words that people used in that saying there to make it a little cleaner for the podcast. But I think the same thing applies here. You still need a robust design underneath it. Your network virtualization isn't going to magically solve all of the challenges. You still have to have a good architecture underneath it, because if you don't, it's not going to just pixie dust kind of thing, right?
Well, it's going to do two things actually. There, it is actually going to simplify the physical network. Today, with virtualization, when you plug a server into a port and you install a hypervisor, we turn it into a VLAN trunk port, and then we let dozens of VLANs trunk out to the VMware server so that any of the VMs, any of the guest VMs can connect to those VLANs. That has a price to be paid in terms of things like spanning tree. There's performance problems. There's configuration of those interfaces gets more complex because it's a trunk port. We have a visibility into where are the endpoints on our network. We don't know. So if we can move those pieces of the network configuration into an overlay, and then get visibility of that overlay networking with another tool, then the physical network can be, to some extent, simplified and become more stable. So you don't have all of these crispy, crunchy features which cause problems, and if they're not configured consistently across the entire network, and this server is different from that server, so there's a different setting here and a different setting. This separation, this abstraction, which some people talk about in computer science, they talk about abstraction between the layers. By abstracting the network configuration away from the physical network gets simpler and hopefully more reliable over time, because certain features are moved into an overlay. And the overlay network's more flexible, so we now have the capability to apply a different management tool to it that can give us visibility into that overlay. So one of the things that I've seen networking people make is the assumption that because the overlay isn't part of the physical network, they lose visibility of it. And that's not true. The controller gives you a whole set of tools to be able to see what the overlay network is now doing. And you get your own new set of visibility tools as a part of that. Is that right, Scott?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the introduction of the NSX controllers and the ability to create the virtual networks, or I use the term logical networks, but the ability to create these virtual networks that are specific to an application or to a tenant or to a business unit or any combination thereof, right? Now we have one single point where we can go and pull visibility and statistics from, and then correlate that to the distributed statistics that exist in the underlay network, and be able to get actually a greater level of visibility than we were able to do before, because we didn't have that abstraction to actually give us that one point to go and say, this is the traffic for application A, or this is the traffic for business unit B, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, absolutely. I would add to that in saying that even before network virtualization, I don't know that there was a whole lot of visibility to begin with, right? I mean, if two VMs weren't talking, how did you know whether to look at the vSwitches or the physical switches? I mean, nobody really had a clue where to begin, right? And then so I think everybody was kind of running around troubleshooting their own problem domain, and then say, well, it's not my fault. It must be yours, right? So I think with this, what Scott just mentioned gives us the possibility of running checks, right? So we can, since you've got the visibility of the virtual network completely centralized, logically centralized the controllers, that can see packets going in and going out across all the systems, you know, we can run more complete tests to say, okay, I can see that the packet is leaving hypervisor one, but it's not showing up at hypervisor two. So, you know, now we need to inspect the physical network, right? So we can really kind of vet the virtual configuration first, you know, check on that, and then we know, okay, we need to start looking at the physical switch. And with all of these CPUs at the edge and the hypervisors that the NSX controllers basically, you know, has control over, for lack of a better term, we can begin to do things that, you know, help to identify, you know, potential problem areas in the physical network, like run a trace route test, right? For example, there's no reason why we couldn't be able to kind of retool a new type of trace route for network virtualization that the edge hosts are issuing to the physical network to help us kind of pinpoint some potential hotspots or problem areas in the physical network. All of that is entirely possible, you know, because at the end of the day, it's just software, right?
Just to highlight that, because the NSX agent is in the hypervisor of the virtual machine, and we'll talk about multi-hypervisors as the next topic, you can actually do packet captures on the virtual NIC of the VM. So you don't need to go and find a switch in the network and find a SPAN port and then capture from that and divert traffic from a VLAN, from a VACL into a SPAN port. You can just do the capture at the edge. And because each server has its own processing power, and you've got, every time you add another server, you're effectively adding more processing power to the network. So this distributed processing is a real feature of this overlay networking capability.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The programmable vSwitch and the hypervisor is capable of, you know, capturing packets. We can even issue packets into the network. We can create packets and send them in as test packets, right? That's another possibility from a troubleshooting standpoint.
And accounting, but that's not quite so important. So why don't we talk a little bit about multi-cloud and multi-hypervisor?
Yeah, absolutely. So the intent there is to have, you know, a network virtualization platform that works with any cloud, any hypervisor, you know, so what does that mean at the end of the day? So we have the NSX controllers, which expose this API where you can create services-rich virtual networks. And that API is available to any upstream cloud platform like an OpenStack, right, or a CloudStack, or maybe it's a VMware vCloud tool, right? So really, you could, in theory, take any cloud platform and point it at this API that the NSX controller is exposing to create these virtual networks. And then at the hypervisor level, you have basically the open vSwitch within NSX, right, which works on Linux hypervisors, it works on KVM, it works on Xen, and we're now creating a version of that that works in ESXi. So you've got Linux hypervisors, you've got ESXi, which you can use as the hypervisor. You know, those upstream API calls are then translated into southbound APIs down to the open vSwitch to create the virtual network.
So I think one of the interesting things here is that NSX actually coordinates all the different platforms and can be one network for all of them. And it's not entirely obvious to people that just because it's got the VMware name on it, that it actually can be used for all possible options going forward. It's a complete strategy.
That's absolutely, yeah. So we see this going into Linux open source clouds. And we also have, of course, the vSphere customer base as well. So these are the customers that have They're diehard vSphere. They've operationalized around the vDistributed switch. So we also have a version packaging of NSX we're calling NSX optimized for vSphere. And that's for those customers there where they're not, you know, radically changing the way that they work with their vSwitch environment. They're not ripping out their VDS and putting in a whole different vSwitch. We're taking the NSX capabilities and we're layering it on top of the existing VMware vDistributed switch for those specific environments. So in NSX for vSphere, it's just going to be all vSphere hypervisors. It's going to be the vSphere web client GUI. Hmm. So minimal operational change for those customers. But at the same time, if you wanted to go stand up an open source cloud or, you know, a different environment, you have the NSX general platform, which can be installed into that environment that's more based on the open vSwitch.
And the overall architecture for the product, you know, as Brad described earlier with NSX, having, you know, these set of controllers and these distributed edge gateways and then the programmable virtual switches, that's remains constant regardless of whether you're looking at a multi-hypervisor environment where you may also have vSphere as part of an environment that has, you know, KVM, Xen, vSphere all together running under OpenStack or under a custom cloud management platform. Even if you move into a pure vSphere environment, where NSX optimized for vSphere is taking advantage of existing vSphere constructs like the vSphere distributed switch and that sort of thing. The overall architecture remains the same, right? It's still the same architecture.
Yeah. And the that would be important for those customers who've got vSphere and then they're using some other orchestration tool, maybe BMC or SEAC or some other process to do their VM automation. And NSX is still applicable to those deployments. You don't have to be using vCloud Director, for example, to make this run.
That's absolutely correct.
Right. So very quickly, I want to talk about the physical network fabric. We talked earlier about the fact it runs over any network. But I think the most exciting part is that up until now, we've been talking about using VXLAN. For those people who have been using vCloud Director 5.1 and using VXLAN tunnels, you had to enable IP multicast. In VMware NSX, we don't need to use multicast anymore. Now, every good networking guy knows that you need multicast because of the BUM, the broadcast, unknown, unicast, and multicast traffic. So how is an NSX agent not using multicast to distribute those broadcasts? What's unique about that?
So yeah, it's leveraging the NSX controllers. The NSX controllers have a table which includes the VTEPs. And so it knows all the VTEPs is the VXLAN tunnel endpoint. So those would be all of the hypervisors. So it has a table of that because it's learned that from all of the NSX agents running in the hypervisors. Whether that's the that's the OVS running in the multi-hypervisor area, or if that's the NSX agent running in the NSX optimized for vSphere. So it has a VTEP table, it has a MAC table, and the NSX controller also has an ARP table. So really what it does is all of the hypervisors register themselves and make their VTEP IP address known to the controller, and then the controller then disseminates that information down to all of the other VTEPs. So when a bump frame is sent, what happens is there's one VTEP, and we're talking NSX for vSphere now, there's one VTEP on each layer 2 segment that is responsible for unicast replicating those bump frames to all of the other hypervisors in that layer 2 domain. And then what it'll do, so it'll replicate there, unicast replicate, and then it'll send a copy to another hypervisor in another layer 2 domain and let it do the unicast replication. Basically, unicast source replication at the source hypervisor to all of the individual VTEPs, and it knows those VTEPs because of the controller information that it received.
The controller knows where they all are. Why do you need to? Right. What's unknown about this system? There's no unknown unicast in a system where everything's reported into a central controller. So you don't have unknown unicast because all the MAC addresses are known by the VM vCenter, if you like, or the vCloud Director. And so the NSX knows what all the ARPs are. The only thing you need is broadcasts. And so you send the broadcast out. It hits the switch. The switch says, I need one copy for each of these VTEPs. Send one. And then it gets there and it says, oh, there's 50 of those. And so it sends it out 50 times. Boom.
That's the advantage of being at the edge hypervisor, is we have visibility into all of the end hosts, right? Mm-hmm. When they come on, we know when a VM turns on, we know its IP address and MAC address right away. We don't have to glean that or learn that, through networking protocols. And also you mentioned ARPs earlier too. So we know where all the IPs are and the MACs of the VMs are. We're actually removing ARP broadcasts from the network too, because there's an ARP cache that's maintained across all of the NSX enabled hypervisors as well. So we'll have the immediate hypervisor just locally respond to ARPs as best we can. And where there's a cache miss, we'll just query the NSX controller for what, the ARP, for what its ARP table is, and respond to that.
I just think that's just so elegant. And for all those people who want to argue that servers are too slow, I want to point you all back to the arguments in 2003 about MPLS at the edge of my network, and all the people who wailed and beat their chests and tore their hair out about, you can't possibly do MPLS at the edge of the network because it's not, there's not enough horsepower. Anyway, we're just unpacking arguments from years gone by. I really want to get to talking about the services, because I think this is really the most exciting part. I want to go through this services that NSX gives, and I want to get into talking about software-defined data centers before we get to the end of the show, and we're sort of running on time. Rather than talk about services generally, Scott, maybe you want to just introduce people to the idea of how the firewall and load balancing works in NSX very briefly, and then we can start talking through the PDF file which we've got, which has a bunch of logical topologies and traffic flows, and we might pick two or three of those and work through them for people and the listeners, and they can download the PDF file and follow along at home.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right, Greg, in that, you know, one of the huge value adds for NSX is that we can now bring these L4 through L7 types of network services into the virtual networks and be able to provide these services and instantiate them and manage them as part of that virtual network. So among the services that NSX will offer on introduction, one of those is firewalling, as you mentioned. And there's two types of firewalling that you'll actually be able to do in NSX. You can do your sort of traditional centralized north-south firewalling, for example, and that's handled in a VM-based format. So that's building on the work that VMware did with their edge gateways. So being able to move traffic through a firewall in that fashion. But one of the new things that NSX introduces, which I think is really, really cool, is actually this thing we're calling the distributed firewall, and that is east-west firewalling that is handled by an in-kernel firewall module. And this is present in vSphere because we can put it into the hypervisor. So it's not present in environments where you might be leveraging KVM or Xen or you know, eventually Hyper-V, those kind of things. But this actually allows us to do firewalling between VMs on the same logical network without having to traverse out to a physical firewall or across some sort of switch fabric. It actually happens right there on the host. And so it removes some measure of traffic off there and helps optimize those traffic flows when you're doing that firewalling.
I would also add to the point Greg made earlier about simplifying the network. You know, one of the challenges in deploying network architecture a lot of times is traffic steering, and you have to, you know, set up these VLANs that steer traffic through some physical firewall connected to some core switch somewhere and then have it, send the traffic back down to the hypervisors again. At this point, what Scott just mentioned, the distributed firewall that's in the kernel, when the packet touches the network, the physical network, it's already been firewalled. So we don't need to complicate the physical network configuration with traffic steering anymore for the east-west firewalling.
Yeah, and if people in the audience don't quite get this, think about it today when you've got a data center and you've got two sides of the data center, and the most common design today is that you have these security zones and you've got a dev test on the left, and on the right-hand side you've got a production network, theoretically, okay? And today we put this huge firewall between these two segments. Well, why is that firewall huge? And the answer is because all of the dev machines are in one security zone and all the production zones are in another, and they have to be able to talk backwards and forwards at high speed. And because we have to do it in one place, that thing needs to be a huge piece of processing power to run that. Well, what if we could apply the firewall rules right where the server is in the virtual hypervisor? Well, then I could be distributing the firewall rules amongst 1,000 servers or 5,000 servers right at the very edge. So as the packet hits the network, the firewall rule is being applied right there. Well, now I don't need a big firewall in the core of my data center, and now I don't have a critical failure point in my data center. And I want you to think about that from a security perspective, because there's a business risk you're solving here. You pull that core data center firewall out because it's just not needed anymore. You've just saved yourself hours of pain, because how often do you update that, and how often can you reboot that firewall between the two because it's mission critical and you can't do anything to it? This moving the firewall out to the edge of the network really changes the way you could implement security in an enterprise network.
Yeah, you're spot on, Greg. I mean, yeah, that's a huge plus in our mind.
And just for clarification, it's not a bunch of little firewalls that you've stuck in front of a VM. It's a distributed firewall.
Yes, right. So it's almost like firewall as a service in the hypervisor kernel. So you've got physical firewalls, and then you've got virtual firewalls, which is basically just a VM of a physical firewall. At the end of the day, it's still this firewall that you have to go manage and you have to go steer traffic through. At this point, when the firewall inspection is built in as a service in the hypervisor kernel, you really have this concept of firewall protection, but there isn't this firewall thing that has a list of rules that you have to shove traffic through, right? You have this concept of containers and logical containers, like Greg was mentioning earlier, the different, you know, zones, right? I could have a logical container that says, you know, PCI applications, and another logical container that says, you know, dev test, right? So you've got all these VMs kind of in the same infrastructure pod, and they're in different logical containers, and the firewall just says, you know, they can't talk to each other, right?
You can have dozens of them. That's the thing I'm excited about, right? Is you can't just have like one dev test environment. You could have one dev environment for Java, and that's a container, and you can have another one for the Oracle the DBAs who've got a test platform, and there's a business system over here, and you can have another one for a different dev. You can have as many of them as you like.
For that matter, Greg, you could have a separate dev test zone for every developer.
Exactly. There's practical limits to how far you could go with this, but, you know.
Of course.
And you can also do things like put your DMZ in your virtual stack, because a DMZ is just a security zone. Normally we isolate it at physical, but we only isolate the DMZ at a physical layer because our normal security controls aren't strong enough. That is, VLAN security is not good enough, MPLS security is not good enough. You know, we just can't let the traffic share because we can't actually guarantee the separation down to a high level of certainty. So that is why I'm excited about this, because I can actually start to have multiple DMZs that are fully isolated right alongside of my production, right alongside of my dev test, but they're all still isolated in one physical infrastructure.
But from a practical standpoint, an operational standpoint, you can still manage this in a reasonable way. You're not just throwing out a bunch of little virtual instances of firewalls that you have to manage individually. In fact, it is a distributed firewall that you can still manage centrally and then use where needed in a particular virtual network.
That's absolutely right, Ethan. And getting back to the point that was made earlier about visibility, now you have a central visibility into security policy, you know, across the whole environment, because you're looking at one firewall, you know, service, the distributed firewall, rather than, you know, tracking down all these virtual firewalls that might be floating around the environment and trying to find the right one and look at its policy. You know, imagine the auditor walks in the door and says, you know, prove to me that the PCI apps are separated from everything else. Okay, let's point our tool at the distributed firewall, and here it is in proof. It's showing it right there, rather than, you know, chasing things around.
Security apps will be able to pull the configuration and see it.
Hey, but let's be honest, security's a little boring, though. Let's get to the cool stuff. Now, Brad, I think you had sent us a series of pictures here that kind of show how traffic moves through an NSX environment, you know, with a bunch of before and after. And one of the easy wins here is east-west layer 3 routing. You want to talk through that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Packet Pushers podcast, so let's push some packets around, right, with NSX. I did send out a PDF, which the listeners should be able to download. Let's go to page number 4, and that's a page titled East-West Layer 3 Routing. So if for those that can't see it right now, I'll try and be as verbose as I can. Basically, what we're showing is before NSX, you probably have a top-of-rack switch, which might be a Layer 2 switch, and you've got your hypervisor connected to that Layer 2 switch, and you've got a Layer 2, Layer 3 core switch in the environment, which aggregates everything. And if you had two virtual machines that were in different IP subnets that you needed to provide routing between those VMs, typically that traffic would go, you know, up to the top rack switch, from there up to the layer 3 core switch, traverse a, you know, VLAN interface, and then come back down to the top rack switch again, and then back down to the server. These would be two VMs even on the same server. You would have basically this hairpin of traffic going to a layer 3 core switch. With NSX added in the environment, what happens is that vSwitch that's in that hypervisor, as I said earlier, is a lot more capable now than it's ever been before. So it's not just a layer 2 bridge, it's also a layer 3 switch as well. So the traffic between two VMs on the same hypervisor that are in different layer 3 subnets are routed directly to each other on the server, and you know, the packet never even touches the layer 2 switch in that point. It stays completely within the server. You're basically reducing a lot of the hops that have to go, you know, through potentially congested links in the physical network and coming down just for the sake of layer 3 forwarding.
Yeah, the vSwitch is now a fully capable layer 3 router, in effect.
Exactly. It's a distributed router. Scott was mentioning earlier the distributed firewall. Same concept with routing. You basically have this logical router which spans all the hypervisors that provides this layer 3 switching between different VXLANs, for logical VXLAN networks right at the edge of the hypervisor.
What's that look like if I'm switching between virtual machines that are in, you know, on different servers?
Absolutely. So I think the next page, page number 5, we show traffic between two different servers. So just again, if before NSX is the environment, let's say you've got two hypervisors, and on each hypervisor I have a virtual machine in a different layer 3 subnet, and they need to talk to each other. That traffic is going up to the layer 2 switch, going up to the core layer 3 router, switching router, coming on back down to server number 2. It's about 4 hops in the network. With NSX in there, in the distributed logical router across a hypervisor environment, what happens is the VM that's on server number one, as it sends its packet into the hypervisor switch, that first hypervisor switch is making a routing decision and sending it directly to server number two. So really all it needs to do is go up to the layer two switch and then back down to server number two. Because at that point, when it hits the wire and it traverses up to server number, or I'm sorry, to the top rack switch, it's basically encapsulated in a VXLAN header or maybe STT header, whatever it is, and has a destination IP address of server number two. Server number two receives it, opens up the encapsulation, there's the original frame, and then delivers it down to the destination VM. So basically two hops in the network as to compare to four hops for switching, layer three switching between VMs on two different servers.
Yeah, and you had meant a good point to follow up in here. We've been talking about VXLAN, and you just mentioned STT as another overlay that you support, and then GRE, it looks like, is also supported.
Yeah, in the NSX for multi-hypervisor environments, you've got GRE, you've got STT, and also VXLAN. In NSX for vSphere, we're just doing VXLAN only, just as a point of clarification.
Okay.
And just one thing about the STT quickly is the reason why you would use STT is because it looks like TCP on the wire. Therefore, if you've got an off-the-shelf common network adapter in your server that supports TCP offload, we're able to leverage those hardware offloads for TCP on the adapter because it looks like TCP to the adapter.
And right, it looks like TCP. It in fact is not, but the way the structure of that packet is, it appears that way to TCP offload engine. He can accelerate it.
It's absolutely.
Yeah. 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 Although I don't know how much deployment you guys have seen of that. I know that was before VMware bought Nasira, which I think is part of where the NSX architecture comes from, was through the VMware's Nasira purchase. I know STT was pretty big. Is that still a big part of this?
Yeah, it is, Ethan. The NSX controllers share the common code base that came out of Nasira's work with NVP. And as you move into the multi-hypervisor environments, the architecture there is very similar to what you see today in the vSphere-only environments where we've taken NSX and optimized it for vSphere. Then you'll see the architecture diverge just slightly, but the core pieces that help provide a lot of this functionality, like the controllers and that sort of thing, are all follow-ons from the NYSERA work.
So related to that, and related to the comments we were just making about east-west layer 3 routing, what it looks like between virtual hosts and the same vSwitch, and then between two different switches, or between two different hosts, is OpenFlow involved in any of the transport here?
So you'll see OpenFlow in multi-hypervisor environments. So when you are deploying NSX in an environment where you're going to be using Xen, KVM, even vSphere as well, then that environment leverages OpenFlow and the OVS DB protocol to communicate between the controllers and the programmable edge switches. In the distribution or the installation of NSX in a pure vSphere environment, we actually don't use OpenFlow. We use a custom TLV-based control plane protocol to talk between the NSX controllers and vCenter and other components for a tighter level of integration with the management stack. And that's because in a pure vSphere environment, we know what the management stack is going to look like. In a multi-hypervisor environment, we could have any number of management stacks. It could be CloudStack, it could be OpenStack, it could be a custom portal that somebody wrote, it could be VCAC talking via REST APIs, et cetera, et cetera.
But the key there is that the OpenFlow functionality is being used to program switches at the edge, you know, software switches at the edge that need to know how to do forwarding. That's where OpenFlow comes into play.
Yes, you're exactly correct. We use OpenFlow to program forwarding rules into the programmable edge virtual switches so they know how, where, and when to get to any of the systems to which they need to communicate based on the definitions of the logical network from the cloud management portal that rides on top of it.
That's an excellent point in that you don't need to go rip out your top rack switches or your core switches to have them support OpenFlow. They just provide packet forwarding like they've always done a very good job at. Because we're at the edge of the programmable hypervisor with the tunneling, you don't need to have OpenFlow in the physical network.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's an interesting add-on tool that can give you some functionality if you need it, and certainly OVS uses it, but it's not absolutely critical that you have hardware that's supporting OpenFlow in your data center core. for this solution. So one thing that we haven't talked about yet is there's a load balancing function within NSX as well. We talked about the routing, we talked about firewalling. So let's talk about the load balancing.
As Scott mentioned earlier, there is the work that came from the VCNS, from the vShield Edge products. What we're really looking at is a multi-service virtual machine that does firewalling, VPN. It also does load balancing too. So you can use that as a place to configure virtual IP addresses and server pools. If your application topology requires load balancing, let's say you have a tier of web servers, you need to provide load balancing across that. That can be provisioned in this Edge virtual machine that may also be doing the firewalling too. So this Edge virtual machine might be the firewall, perimeter firewall that's touching the outside physical VLANs, and it might also be the load balancer and the VPN and all those things. And it's also doing routing too. So this multi-service VM can do load balancing. If your application architecture requires maybe a one-armed load balancer that's hanging off one of the tiers, like hanging off the web tier or the app tier, you can take that VM and basically just deploy it as a load balancer in adjacent to the virtual machines as a one-armed load balancer.
It might be just worth pointing out that this is page 9 of the PDF. You can actually see this drawn out as a network architecture where how the flows differ for using an NSX Edge instance to do the load balancing as compared to a normal traditional environment.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. So on page 9, we're showing a traditional physical firewall and a traditional physical load balancer attached to a core switch, what those flows look like. And then comparing that to when NSX is the environment, how you have the NSX Edge providing firewalling and also deploying a load balancer as a one-arm load balancer in the environment. So a lot of the hops that go through the firewall and the load balancer are all happening kind of down in the Edge hypervisor area where you have, you know, line rate, layer 2 switches perhaps, and a lot of direct, you know, host VM to VM communications within a host.
So looking at these diagrams, you've got the inline load balancer and then you've got the one-armed load balancer. So in the diagram on page 9, the NSX load balancer shows as a separate agent or is it actually in the kernel?
On page 9, the NSX load balancer, there is a one-arm load balancer. That's basically a VM. So right. That's a VM that's attached and it's doing load balancing. Absolutely. Right.
So the compute and memory you need to run that load balancer is a virtual machine in the VMware environment, is in the vSphere cluster. It's a vSphere instance somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a virtual machine.
Okay. So there's two things about that I want people to, that I think are worth drawing attention to. One is, when somebody wants a load balancing instance, the networking guy still configures it because the NSX system administrates that. And the second thing is somebody's going to pay for it because when that load balancer starts burning CPU and memory to perform that load balancing, it has to consume a VM and somebody has to pay for the VM. You don't have one big $500,000 load balancer at the front of your stack. You've got this VM that's burning CPU and memory, so somebody needs to pay for that. Instant load balancing. And the third, and I'll give you a bonus one for this, the third one is that because you've got lots and lots of small load balancers, you can have one load balancer per service or one load balancer between a few services, you actually get a simpler load balancer. So one of the problems we have with physical load balancers today is because they're so expensive and they're so large, we run everything through them, hundreds of services in some cases. And so anytime you want to go and update that load balancer with new code, you've got to take an outage to the entire data center or to hundreds of mission critical services or a risk outage or something, right? Whereas if you had 40 instances of load balancers, you can just upgrade one at a time. Or when you go to reconfigure one, you're only affecting one service at a time. There's a negative to this, and I'll happily acknowledge it, which is administering 30 or 40 load balancers might be a problem. But that's probably a better problem with a good management platform than it is trying to make one pair of physical load balancers work optimally for your change control environment.
No, I mean, I think you raise some really good points, Greg, in that you have, and this applies to firewalls as well. If you've got these big, massive physical appliances, be them firewalls or load balances, you're right. Everything, all of the applications are provisioned on these big devices, and you tend to get rule sprawl. You know, I've seen firewalls with 5,000 rules on them, and you point to a set of rules, and you say, well, what are those rules there for? Well, I don't know. Some application that was deployed 2 years ago, I'm not even sure if it exists in the environment anymore, right? And everybody's afraid to take it away because you don't know if it's actually being used or not. To your point, the actual, you know, load balancer that is deployed is only specific to that application. and it's deployed, you know, through software. So when that application goes away, for example, or transitions to another environment, it basically the load balancer goes away, and the rules that it had with it go away as well. So you know, really don't have these, you know, artifacts and remnants of all of these age-old, you know, intented configurations that still hang around and collect dust and complicate things that nobody knows what to do with.
Which isn't to say you couldn't use your firewall of choice. I'm looking at your partner integration list, and there's a load balancer, a few load balancer folks that are on there. This may be a good time to bring up who all the NSX platform is integrated with.
Everything we've talked about so far, we said, you know, NSX is this package where you can get soup to nuts, layer 4 through layer 7, or layer 2 through layer 7, complete virtual networks, you know, and all in the NSX package. But there might be some cases where, you know, you have a specific firewall vendor that you want to use, or a specific load balancer vendor that you want to use. What we want to do with NSX is provide API extensions for those third parties to integrate with NSX, both at, you know, the management plane, the control plane, and the data plane, to provide that same operational experience of, you know, instantly provisioning networks, but still using, you know, somebody else's box, like a web application firewall vendor, for example, using that to actually do web application firewalling and have that provisioned within an NSX network. So one example of the partnering that we're showing at VMworld is the top of rack switch, hardware switches with VXLAN and hardware. For example, you could take a top rack switch with VXLAN and hardware and register it with the NSX controller. And what it does is it takes its physical ports and it's able to connect those to logical networks that are basically VXLANs inside the NSX environment. So you might have, you know, non-virtualized hosts like database, Oracle databases, or you might have, you know, physical load balancers and firewalls that you want attached into the virtual environment, that you can attach those to a top rack switch. And that top rack switch uses API extensions with NSX to create that programmatic connection of physical ports to virtual. That's one example. So we'll be showing a lot of demos at VMworld with partners on that. And I think this is going to extend further on to layer 3 gateways and load balancers and IDS and IPS and WAN optimizers and things like that, you know, through these API extensions.
Yeah, the point being that it makes the investment you have in your physical network, whatever that might be today, there's a lot of relationships here that the VMware is developing so that that hardware investment you may already have may talk to NSX in some way and therefore enhance the performance and functionality of NSX.
We're not going to try and be the load balancer in the world or the best firewall in the world that beat everybody at features. We're going to try and provide 80%, you know, most of the features that a customer would deploy. But if there's that extra feature that you need from a specific firewall load balancer, we want to, you know, provide a platform for those to be integrated in.
Yeah, F5, I noticed, is one of your partners. And, of course, their load balancer is very feature-rich, very heavy on customization and supporting a wide variety of applications at a deep level where they've taken the time to do some heavy-duty tuning and, you know, and so on. And they're really into load balancing those particular applications and some kind of esoteric ones too, some really unusual protocols that are supported, as opposed to the 80%, which is going to be, we need HTTP, we need SSL offload, and we need to be able to take pool members in and out of service so that we can do maintenance on them, that kind of thing. And that's going to be good enough for a lot of folks. So I think another question worth asking, you know, by the time this podcast has gone out, we know NSX has been announced, it's public and so on, going to be available Q4, I believe, in 2013, and with the feature set that we've talked about. Well, what comes after that? What are the plans for NSX, things that you think customers might be interested in?
You know, we can't actually, you know, comment on futures. We have to throw out the official party line that we're not allowed to comment on futures. But I think one way of looking at this is that now that we have this construct, and Brad, you know, feel free to jump in anywhere here. Now that we have this virtual network construct, and we've worked hard to build the integrations into the physical network. So, you know, the hardware VTEPs that Brad was talking about earlier, you know, the gateways, so being able to provide all this functionality, you could expect us to begin to explore other ways of leveraging this construct. And you know, one example might be look at what VMware did with disaster recovery and site recovery manager. You know, once we had the virtual machine construct, we provided this automated way of being able to fail over virtual machines with storage replication, all that kind of stuff. What kind of benefits could we bring to customers if we were also to leverage some of the work we've been doing in network virtualization in disaster recovery type contexts, right? So.
Ah, okay. So you're being coy then. I see. But there's in other words, now that the platform's in place, logically you can kind of go in some different directions. Maybe you have to be coy again, but I'll ask a question that kind of struck me, which was a traffic steering. That was something that really never came up, but strikes me as plausible. Is that of interest, maybe?
Well, I'll let Brad comment on the traffic steering, but I will say I have to be quiet because I do enjoy my job. So,
fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I will say the look at we have the capabilities in the NSX edge as in 2013 is routing. So northbound routing is one of those capabilities we have now, where that NSX edge that we talked about earlier can establish a routing protocol session with a physical router in a data center with BGP or OSPF or ISTIS. So, you know, just imagine the ability to take, you know, that virtual network and create a snapshot or template and then move that to another data center. And, you know, it establishes that routing protocol session again in the other data center, you know, announcing the IP addresses that are inside that application, right? It's always been easy to throw VMs around and start up VMs in another data center, but recreating all of the network and all the network services and, you know, IP address, you know, routing and things like that has always been, you know, a tremendous, you know, point of difficulty with, yes, with HA. So yeah, I think yeah, this provides a capability now through programmatically, you know, defining the whole virtual network with just a bunch of, you know, software, virtual switches and controllers. We have the possibility to really, you know, kind of do disaster recovery in a completely, you know, getting close to push button, you know, unicorn land, right?
Yeah, you really, my brain lit right up when you said that. The longest part of the conversation when you talk about, well, even just implementing something like Site Recovery Manager, how are we going to do it? How are we going to instantiate? Are we going to extend the VLANs across to the other data center? Are we going to let them sit there quietly and then only turn them up when we need them during an actual event that we need to react to? And gosh, we can't automate this, can we? Or can we? And the conversation just goes on and on because there's so many pros and cons to all the different approaches. Something like what you just said, which is take the environment, move it, bring it up again, and announce all the routes and the networks to this new data center wherever you've moved the environment to. That's pretty compelling if that comes down the line at some point. You're not going to have a lot of trouble selling that.
Yeah, we definitely see multi-data center as a killer app moving forward.
It's pretty important from a cloud perspective as well. So one of the things that's important here is for people to move, in my opinion, away from thinking of things as servers. I've banged on this earlier, but the real place where NSX shines, in my opinion, and I've done a lot of work in this lately, is when you get into vCloud Director and the ability to create software-defined data centers. And one of the topics we haven't hit is the concept of software-defined data centers, where vCloud allows you to create arbitrary organizations and to instantiate VMs within inside of those organizations and apply those zone policies as a construct. Instead of just having a VM, you actually have all this metadata attached to the VM about who owns it and who can administer it and what comes with it. And there's a whole lot of other stuff in vCloud Director, but instead of thinking about your operational environment as this VM and this server, this server, this server, this server, you just have you create an organization and then you put all the servers into it, and vCloud Director sort of takes care of most of the rest of it. And when you add this with NSX, so the NSX and the vCloud Director start talking together, you get huge synergies of exchange of information between the server platform, because the VM knows what the server is inside of the hypervisor. And so it can tell NSX via an API, and NSX can query the vCloud Director API and get data about what organization does this belong to. And if you're in this organization, you should only be able to connect to these. So therefore, the firewall rules can be quasi-derived from the data. There's a whole lot of innovation that can happen in this space where the server orchestration tools, vCloud Director, and even further up the piece, VCAC, VCO, and VCOps, if you start integrating those with VMware NSX, you start to get some really astonishing integration capabilities. And from my point of view, the visibility of the network in terms of this is my application that I'm running, and it's running on these servers, and here's the network services and the VLANs and the ports, and here's the performance of all those machines. I can actually say, give me a report on the organizational performance of that cluster of servers within the VCD instance, which might have 20 organizations. Now, that's a very difficult verbal picture to paint on a podcast, but that's the sort of area where we're heading to. This is the vision of SDN that I've been talking about for a long time, which is it's not just about configuring the network. It's about bringing the services at the top. So instead of punching buttons on the keyboard every day, you are actually looking at the way we provide services to the business. The business doesn't want a load balancer. It wants a reliable service. The business doesn't want a Windows NT server or a Windows 2012 R2 instance. It wants to click on a button and raise an invoice and send it out and get paid. And that's what we need to do, is map our infrastructure into that piece. And that's why products like VMware NSX get me excited, because we're one step closer to that vision of providing services. We need to be doing, as networking guys, more load balancing, more firewalling. We need to provide better steering services on the network. We need to be able to account for traffic. We need to be able to charge back consumption of load balancers and firewalls and IDSs and all that sort of stuff. And these are the tools that we're getting towards. I don't know about you, Ethan, but I'm getting a little, I am excited to see SDN tools like NSX arrive.
Well, we were having a conversation the other day, Greg, you and I, and and the point came up that SDN is real. You know, it's really happening. There are products brought to market like NSX that are enabling this sort of new way to do networking. I'm excited. I think I was whining to you in the Skype message window the other day about, you know, the time that I'm spending to learn a new command line interface, and it's kind of stupid. All I really want to do is light up routing and make it redundant and redistribute some routes. I don't really care about the command line interface that enables me to do it. I want to get the job done. And on a larger scale, software-defined networking is allowing a business to get its job done.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, and now that these products are coming to market, it's it's a pretty interesting and exciting time to be in networking. That is for darn sure.
Yeah. I wrote an article the other day for Network Computing which said, you don't buy an SDN in the same way that you don't go and buy a data center network. You don't sort of rock up to your favorite hardware company and say, I'd like to buy a data center network, please. And they give you a SKU and there it is, right? When you buy a data center network, you go and buy, you know, top of rack switches, core switches, this firewall, that load balancer. You buy cables, you buy software for all of those. You buy management platforms, you buy... You don't buy a data center network, you have a data center network, and it's got a bunch of things inside of it, and each one of those things is a response to a use case that you define. You want this amount of performance in your layer 3 core, you need this much performance at the top of rack. So if you want to go and buy an SDN, you can't buy one for the same reason, is that it consists of all of these other tools. It consists of management platforms, hypervisors, it consists of applications inside of there, and you need to establish your use cases for what you want SDN to achieve for you, and then go and buy all of those pieces and bring them together. In the same way that you buy a data center network, that's how you're going to buy your SDN. So people who sit there and say, oh, you can't buy an SDN today, make me laugh, because you're just showing how ignorant you are when you actually say, but you can't buy SDN today, because actually you can. It's your existing physical network, your switches today, your software on your firmware on your switches today is part of an SDN network. The orchestration tools that we'll bring to play, they're new. This concept of overlays and controllers, that's new. But everything else is the same as it always was. You'll still be using your favorite management platform to monitor speeds and feeds and over SNMP in the physical network, at least in the short term. And, you know, there's no change. A lot of it's the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the biggest shift, architectural shift in networking that I've seen, and certainly in my career, right? And I think it's an excellent time to be in networking. And I think we're going to see the careers of network engineers evolve just the same way that server, you know, engineers kind of evolved into, you know, virtualization admins and cloud admins. I think as a networking engineer moving forward, I think you need to get, you know, well-versed into networking services, not just to be a layer 2 guy and a layer 3 guy, but, you know, understanding firewalling and security, understanding load balancers and application delivery controllers, WAN optimization, and how all of those things come together to support an application and define, you know, a virtual network. And so I think moving forward, we're going to see this virtual network engineer, right, that is kind of well-versed in all these areas and is architecting virtual networks, right, and is doing capacity planning and things like that, and kind of less time doing some of the mundane, you know, configuration of VLAN statements on switches and things like that.
All right, well, I think that's a great place to wrap the show for this week. And as we dematerialize the virtual board boom and pack it away in our traveling cloud bag, and we invoke the software-defined route that will return you to our favorite listening device next week, we will return. So thanks very much to Scott Lowe for joining us this week. Scott, please tell people where they can find you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Greg. You can find me on my blog at blog.scottlowe.org or on Twitter at @Scott_Lowe.
And of course, Scott is working for VMware. One of the things we may not have made clear enough during the show is that today's show is sponsored by VMware NSX, and we thank them for doing so. It's been an exciting opportunity to talk to Brad Headland today. Please tell us where we can find you.
Thanks, Greg. It's been a pleasure to be on the podcast. This is actually my first time on Packet Pusher, so real excited to join. You can find me at bradheadland.com. That's my blog, or at Twitter, at Brad Headland. And thanks again for having us today, Greg.
No worries. It's a pleasure. Actually, we must try and meet up at some point in the future.
That would be great.
True.
Yes.
And before I unsaddle my software-defined unicorn, thank you, Mr. Banks, once again for riding side saddle on the co-unicorn.
That's a really uncomfortable picture I have in my brain now, but thank you for that.
That's good.
You can find me on Twitter at EC Banks, and I'm blogging at ethancbanks.com, packetpushers.net, and at Network Computing. And and I'm done. There you go.
There you go. Okay. And of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com. On the Twitters is at etherealmind, and a whole bunch of other social media places. You can no doubt find me there. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Remember that you can go to the website and see the PDF file and be able to download it on the blog post that supports the podcast, and that is at packetpushers.net. You can leave comments on today's show to tell us whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, and we love to hear your feedback. You can also follow the Packet Pushers on the Twitter as at Packet Pushers. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.